This is an MUT Radio podcast.
Hello, I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, and much more. Joining us today is Dr. Kaelin du Plessis, who is currently a veterinarian at Pretoria Zoo with a special interest in exotic animals and surgery. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Dr. du Plessis, starting with you, what first drew you to veterinary science?
I think for me, it started with a deep love of animals, but it grew into something much more because my work became my absolute passion as well as my hobby. And I've always had a real desire to understand them and to stand up for their well-being. And so animals can't tell you where it hurts. So being able to use science and medicine to relieve suffering felt incredibly meaningful to me.
And you've had quite an interesting career trajectory in a way with a strong focus on the public sector. When we were chatting offline, you spoke about being at the SPCA, you spoke about being with the police, and now currently with Pretoria Zoo. Casting your mind back, what were your interests towards exotic animals in particular and surgery?
So I've always been drawn to the more unusual and challenging side of things. And exotic animals are so diverse because, I mean, a bird is not the same as a reptile and a reptile is nothing like a rabbit. So you're constantly learning in this field. And surgery is just adds another layer of focus and precision. It's where your knowledge, quick thinking and technical skills all come together in a very immediate way.
And when I think about the idea of exotic animals and I'm just like thinking about parallels with humans, you've got one entity, one anatomy, whereas when you're dealing with exotic animals, you've got reptiles, you've got birds, you've got mammals. There is this whole spectrum. How do you manage to work between these different species?
I think it just comes by itself. I think I've always had such a love for these intricate animals and reading up constantly, being in touch with mentors, being, you know, on social media, seeing what the world is doing, being in touch with AI, Facebook people, other surgeons, colleagues that are also doing the same. I think that is so, so important just to make sure you are still in the loop with current skills and with current development of the exotic world.
It sounds incredibly diversified, and we've used exotic as an expression so far in the conversation. Can you just define it a little bit more so the public has a better understanding of what the phrase means for animals?
So an exotic animal is generally any non-traditional domestic species that requires specialized care. And these include your birds, your reptiles, small mammals, such as your primates, and then sometimes wildlife as well. The reason I'm using sometimes wildlife is because there is a law, you know, a definition that they use in law or a legal definition. And that is that a species that is not native to the country or the region. So just to give you an example, a Bengal tiger would be exotic and non-native, whereas a caracal would be wild but indigenous. So technically, it's not exotic in the biodiversity sense, yet it is still treated as an exotic animal. So these exotic animals, they've got different anatomy and physiology. They've got specialized housing, care, nutrition, and handling. So that is what makes them unique and more different.
And what would you say are some of the more typical species that you treat?
Oh, so I'm in the privileged position of treating anything from antelope to wild cats to primates, which is one of my favorites is primates. Then a lot of exotic birds and even fish we treat. And then there's the whole exotic side of reptiles, which also includes our caimans, our alligators and our crocodiles.
And I'd imagine, again, with the diversity factor, that surgery on exotic animals would be incredibly complex. Can you give us a sense of how different it is to operate on, say, a parrot versus a reptile or small mammal compared to domestic animals, and just thinking about this in terms of the space, the surgeries, the anesthesia requirements, tell us what types of skills this demands.
So it's often more delicate. So many exotic patients are so tiny and they tend to stress easily, and their bodies respond very differently to your anesthetic as well as your pain medication. Birds, for example, they don't have a diaphragm like we do. They've got air sacs. And reptiles, if you do surgery on reptiles, your skill is completely different, and the way you do your sutures are completely different because they heal so slowly. Another thing is you require very specialized equipment and very refined surgical technique. And then obviously you need very close monitoring, because as soon as their body temperature changes, it's quite a big difference in their bodies.
So I'd imagine everything is handled on a case-by-case basis. There isn't a kind of a formula that applies to everything.
No, unfortunately not.
Then another thing that I want to talk about, and one of my colleagues, her daughter, deals with people who have decided to breed wolves, and then they can no longer handle them because a wolf is not a dog. So many exotic animals are kept as pets, and sometimes there really is a lack of proper knowledge. Can you tell us about some of the biggest misconceptions that you've experienced about people owning exotic animals, and what are some of the responsibilities that are neglected?
So for me, I think the biggest is that a lot of people think they are easy and low maintenance, which is completely not true. They require specific needs such as specific diets, lighting, temperature control, and space requirement. I mean, take for example the wolf. They are so delicate when it comes to change, and I think a lot of people don't do enough research before they attempt to buy these things. Another misconception is that people think that if they look okay, they are okay. They are dealing with an exotic animal. They don't show any form of illness whatsoever until the very end, and normally it's then too late. So just because they look okay, they're not okay. And then the last factor is the cost factor. Everybody thinks it's a cheap niche market. It's very expensive. To buy the necessary husbandry is not cheap, and to keep the correct food and diet, it's not cheap. And that's why also your vet visits to an exotic doctor is a bit more than a normal domestic doctor.
I imagine. I mean, it must be so specialized with what you're doing. Given your experiences, what types of opportunities exist for women who want to focus and specialize in exotic animal medicine and surgery, whether that's locally or internationally?
There are more and more opportunities opening up, which is so exciting, because women tend to treat animals much differently than men do, because we are more sensitive. And women can go into advanced clinical training, wildlife and conservation medicine. They can also go into zoo work, research, academia, and even international specialized programs are currently active as well. So, yes, there's a lot of things you can do with the veterinary exotic field. And I think there's a big need for it, specifically in South Africa.
And do you think that also because of the fact that women have almost like a higher degree of empathy, that it makes them better practitioners?
I honestly think that because we've got more attention to details and we are more empathetic, that definitely counts towards us. But when it comes, obviously there are different pros and cons to every situation. And I think when we discussed this offline as well, I explained that it can be a very emotionally toll. It can take a big emotional toll on specifically female. But I think because women are more orientated into detail, it accounts in our favor. And the fact that we've got better communication skills also counts in our favor.
Staying with our theme of women, because it is important for us as the show, how have you been able to balance and juggle between motherhood and your career?
This is the most difficult question, because I don't think I always get it right. And if my husband were here, he would tell you, no, I'm always at work. I only spend time at my work. But I think Because you are on call 24/7 as a veterinarian, you are on call 24/7 as a mother, and you are on call 24/7 as a wife, it makes things quite a bit confusing. And I've learned that boundaries and support systems are essential. So you need to make time to recharge. And that is not a luxury. That is a necessity as a mother and as a woman. And when you take care of yourself, you can show up better for your patients, for your family, and for your work.
And how do you do this personally? Do you have a balance of 50-50, or is it almost an integration between the work that you do and, I don't know, bringing your work home with you, for instance, and allowing?
Yeah, I think the most confusing word is balance, because what is balance? I mean, is it 50% at work, 50% at your house? Is it 100% at work, 100? The definition of balance is what makes it so confusing. And I think the most important thing for women is that you need to be happy in your career. You need to be happy with your family. And as soon as you can master that, if I can use those terms, then yeah, I would say you are successful. And it's also important to note that your career, something you have chosen that you spend most of your time with, it's so important that it is also a healthy and a conducive relationship, environment. You need to be happy in that in order to be happy at your house, to be happy in your marriage. Because if you go to your job and you are so unhappy, the chances of you being a good wife and a good mother is also not going to work out.
So there is no cookie cutter solution. It's what works best for you as an individual.
Definitely.
And while we're on this topic, can you just bring into light perhaps some of the hard truths, the realities, excuse me, almost the less glamorous aspects of being a vet?
Definitely. I think the biggest thing is you deal with a lot of emotion. Just remember, when you work with a client, you don't just work with the emotional side of it. You work with a financial burden as well. When those people come in, they've already got this thing, oh, this vet is going to try and take all your money. Oh, this animal is my everything. So there needs to be a good balance between that. And you need to respect the client, but they must also not be able to take advantage of your job. The job is emotional. There's no means around it. And I think it's so important for anyone, whether you're male or female, but this is specifically for female, that you need to learn to compartmentalize the good and the bad. And if you need to speak with somebody, you definitely need to converse with a colleague or with somebody that's in a similar situation so that you can get advice from that person. Another thing that's not glamorous about this work is, and I've explained it to you offline as well, it's a very physical work, extremely physical. You can't go out with painted nails and a full face of makeup and, nice shoes. It's definitely not like that. You're constantly aware of diseases that are around you, because in my field, there are zoonotic diseases. And as soon as that affects you, then, I mean, what's your future like? So it's definitely not a glamorous work at all.
Let's just tap onto the aspect of zoonotic. Just explain what that means so that people understand the transfer.
Of course. So a zoonotic disease is a disease that the animal has that you can get.
And is that quite prevalent?
Well, the fact that I work with primates, there's a lot of diseases that they get that we can also get, and one of them is TB. A lot of the animals do have TB, and that is highly contagious, and it is a very zoonotic disease. So it can get extremely dangerous.
Very interesting. And then, so we've chatted about the realities, the unglamorous aspect of this. I would imagine that every single day that you have is incredibly different, that no 2 days are the same. Can you tell us about some of the most memorable cases that have stayed with you and why?
Of course. So just this year, I've had the privilege of working, of, you know, operating a red kangaroo who had a very scarce basal cell carcinoma that was recently removed. And then a massive mass returned. And they opted to euthanize. And I said, whoa, let's just give this animal a chance and let's see if we can save this animal. And I removed a mass of 900 grams from this kangaroo, which is so rewarding because it just gave that animal that extra chance in life. And I think that is one of the biggest things for me. And then because I do my, you know, because I have the privilege of working exotic animals, I had the privilege of working with a gorilla, a gibbon, and this is all just this year, a gibbon, and I had to do a C-section on a capuchin. So it's such a rewarding job because as soon as you've given that animal that extra chance in life or that, you know, it's the best feeling ever. And then I can also say that with that given, I've also operated a forest cobra in January that had severe cancer in the face. And your typical human would be like, nope, let it die. It's a snake. It's a scary animal. It's dangerous. And the fact that we could remove all the cancer just gave that snake a second chance, even though it is so dangerous, even though it's potentially not the best animal on earth, it still gives them a second chance in life.
But also given the environment that you're in as the zoo, this is preservation, this is conservation, and this is about sustainability and allowing these animals to live, to kind of do their job.
Exactly, exactly. It's very rewarding. I've also operated a rabbit recently that had a very, very, very scarce inguinal scrotal hernia. And the fact that you can correct that surgically, it's so rewarding to see that that animal is now able to be a rabbit. I know it sounds so stupid, but it's those small things in life that stay with you forever. I mean, instead of just euthanizing this animal, not giving it a chance, I mean, it's just a rabbit. And in some cases, it's not just a rabbit. People lately don't have kids. Some of them only have pets. And that is so important to understand because sometimes you need to give your extra because that animal is, you know, that it's everything to those people.
Given your role in the exotic space, and because it is so far removed from everyday life that we have in the domesticated world, tell us about your instance with a lion and then the vultures.
Oh, perfect. So we recently had a lion that was not doing well. She was really off and not eating. And it turned out she had a pyometra, which is pus that accumulates in the uterus. So it was a massive surgery. We drained liters and liters of pus and she's back to normal. So that is such a feel good. It's such a feel good moment for us because we almost lost her. It was very close that we lost her and she's back to normal. And just this weekend, I had a Cape vulture that was completely collapsed, completely. They sent me a video and they're like, listen, yeah, I think we must call it quits. And while I was on my way to work, I explained to them, no, don't give up. Please inject this. We will fix her. We will do this. We will do that. And as that took place, I arrived at the zoo and automatically she was, I wouldn't say back to normal, but she was up and about. She's happy. And now she's back to normal. She's in her cage doing exceptionally well. So sometimes you just need that little bit of TLC.
And this also speaks though to the fact of telemedicine in a way, even though you were on the phone, but just of being able, you don't have to physically be in that space to necessarily prescribe the right type of treatment.
And I think one of the big things is that the use of AI as well, vets are very scared of AI. Vets are thinking, you know, AI is going to take over our jobs and it's never, ever going to replace veterinarians. That I can promise. It's actually, I see it as something positive because now we can look up on research much easier. We can see if there's any data on, I mean, a kangaroo with a basal cell carcinoma. There's never been a paper written on it. And so with AI, we can actually refine our skills as veterinarians. Instead of using it or seeing it as a threat, we can actually use it to our advantage. I mean, if you see something on an X-ray that you're not quite familiar with, I'm sure AI will also be able to pick it up. And I think that's why a lot of vets are also advertising themselves as being exotic because they think they can master that, which can be a bit dangerous, but it does assist you as a veterinarian to help this animal quicker than you going to an exotic veterinarian.
And apart from the work that you do in the day-to-day practice side of things, are you also, for instance, writing papers and publishing? Because, as you say, how often do you come across a red kangaroo with basal cell carcinoma?
So we are constantly trying to figure out what we can write papers on. In the near future, there will be about two papers that we will be releasing, and the topic will then be discussed. But definitely, 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 I'm privileged enough to be in a field where papers were constantly being written. And so we do have a bucket list among the veterinarians where we're going to say, you know, we're writing three papers this year because we're privileged enough to see those animals. It's not every day that anybody can work with a kangaroo or that can work with a caiman or that can work with certain types of snakes. It's not every day you see these things. And it's actually to the rest of the veterinarian's best interest. I mean, if they see a rabbit with X, Y, and Z, rabbits are everybody lately has rabbits. So it will actually just improve and refine the rest of the veterinarians.
Yeah, it's contributing to the knowledge base, which,
Exactly.
if it's there, you've got access to it, and also when you've got it from a legitimate sources and references.
Exactly. And I think a lot of vets, they're very hesitant to share their knowledge because all our life we had to fight to get into vet school. You had to fight to survive. You had to fight to stand out. So if you've got a niche skill, the chances of you sharing that is very little because you still want to maintain that relationship with a client. You don't want to lose a client. So it becomes a very gray area among veterinarians.
And thinking of this aspect of fighting, one of the other areas that we often find with womanity and our guests in different fields is that women often experience elements of discrimination in the work that they're doing. And it's kind of like, well, this is perceived as a man's role. And then when a woman arrives, there's this stereotype that goes off in someone's head, and they think that you are the assistant or the nurse. Have you ever had experiences like that, and how have you overcome them?
Definitely. I think it happens so often. And I think a lot of the time the people aren't even aware that they are so blunt. But it happens so often. And I explained this one to you while we were offline that I had to go to a farmer with that's breeding with cattle. And as soon as I arrived on the farm, he's like, "Nope, I don't want a woman working on my field. Please give me a man." And automatically they think, because you're female, you're not able to do the job, even though you've got your degree as a veterinarian, you've got a degree in animal science, you've got a further degree in a lot of things. And they're just like, "Nope, not a woman. You're not strong enough to do this. Unfortunately, you won't be able to deal with this situation." And I think it happens so often. And as soon as you can prove, I think that's one of the things as well, is that you constantly need to prove that you can do it. Which is also, it gets a bit irritating sometimes because you always have to be extra better to show, you know, women can actually work with buffalo. Women can actually work with large animals. It's not just men. Women can do it.
I think that's a perfect way of advocating, not just for women in the field, but in terms of your discipline, but the fact that women are always going to go the extra mile because they have to, that means you're going to get better service from a woman.
That's true. That's so true.
Now, one of the questions that I ask all my guests on this show is about some of the factors that have contributed to their success. So sometimes people will talk about focus, faith, a particular person, or values in their life. In your opinion, what would you say have been some of the key drivers to your success?
Okay, so for me, success has come from discipline, consistency, and a strong sense of purpose. From a young age, I had to learn to sink or swim. And that is such an important aspect for me because I made choices in life and I did not settle for the answer no. When I couldn't get something right, I made it happen. And I think that is something that taught me that I need to trust myself in order to be successful.
Perfect. And what would be some of your lessons of advice to younger women of perhaps having a greater belief in themselves? What do they need to do to understand that their voice matters and not be drowned out by the noise around them?
So I think it is important to for all the girls and the women that are listening that you belong in science, medicine, and any specialized field you dream of. Don't let the fear of being different or standing out stop you, because your perspective, your compassion, and your intelligence are needed in this world. And it's important for everybody that, that's listening, that they must stay curious, they must work hard and ask for support if you need it, and never underestimate how far you can go.
Great advice. And can you tell us about some of the pivotal moments in your life as you were growing up?
So firstly, the chances of me getting into vet school, I never ever thought it would happen. The odds were completely against me. So I first did my BSc animal science, and I tried so hard to get into vet school, never, never, never got in. And as soon as I started my honors in BSc, I got into vet school. So then it was another 6 years of veterinary school. And the odds were always, I don't want to play a pity party, but it was always against me in the sense that I never stood out the way I should have. And that's another key factor for everybody that's listening, that you don't always need to stand out. You don't always need to be different in the sense of, shame, this person is going through X, Y, and Z in life. You can still make it if you just have a very strong mind.
That speaks to a lot on the aspect of perseverance. And I always think, in South Africa, we really only have one institution, Onderstepoort, that does veterinary
Yes.
science. So it must be incredibly competitive to get in.
Yes, it is extremely competitive. So in my year, when I it first let me explain it like this, in the year 2009, 2010, that is when Onderstepoort changed its curriculum, where they didn't take kids out of matric. They said you first need to do 6 months of BSc animal science. And that is when a lot of people fell out, because they were like, oh, this is not what I want to do. I'm not getting into vet school. And it's such a competitive field, so competitive. In my class of BSc, they only selected 11 people, which is very little, which is really very
11.
little. Yeah, we were 11 people that got into vet school from the BSc group.
Gosh,
Yeah.
incredibly competitive. And also, the other thing that I think about, and perhaps I'm wrong here, is that I imagine that there's kind of like this cohesive community, because you all come from the same place.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not like that, because you would think we would back each other and we would support each other. I think it just because most vets are left-brainers and we're very competitive and we want to stand out and we need to win. I think that kind of spoils it for everybody. And it's not just myself that thinks that way. A lot of vets I've spoken to, they all say, yes, vets don't tend to back each other. It's just not in us.
Very interesting. But I guess, that's also, part of the reason that you go into private practice. You have your own brand, you do your own thing, and different types of personalities fitting different streams.
Exactly.
And then, because we are a gender-based show, can you tell us who've been some of the strong women in your life?
Are definitely family members, and then my friends. And I think that is also such an important message out there to the listeners, is that you need to associate yourself with the correct people. If you are wanting to achieve a lot in life, you are not going to hang out with the wrong crowd. And exactly when I needed support, and when I needed advice, and when I was not doing well, I didn't go to those friends that were bringing me down. I actually went to the people that are so important to me, and that were my sisters, my friends. That those are the people you need to cling on to, and it needs to be uplifting. And I think I was privileged enough to have my sisters, to have friends that continuously supported me and built me up. And as soon as I felt, I'm not going to be successful, or I'm not going to make this test, or I'm not going to win, they were there encouraging me. It was not the wrong crowd of people, and everybody has a wrong crowd. And it's just important for the listeners to know that you need to associate yourself with a correct group of friends in order to make it in life.
Finding your tribe, I think, is a good
That's
reference.
so nice. That's putting it very nicely.
But besides your tribe, because those are the people that we kind of formulate those relationships with, and sometimes it's done in a social and informal way. What are some of your views about actually having formal mentorship or sponsors, people who've walked the journey before you to make it an easier path?
So mentors are extremely important. Mentors, but it must be a two-way stream. Nobody's going to know that you need that mentorship if you don't go to the mentor. And it's so important for your mentors to have a big influence in your life. It's no use you say, yeah, I'm going to my mentor, but that person is actually not, it hasn't got any value in your life. So I think it's very important to have the correct mentors who will enhance your ability as a good veterinarian or who you can chat to when things are getting tough. That is extremely important. And it's extremely important to have the correct role models in life. That's very important.
Thanks for sharing that. I think those words of wisdom transcend literally any career, having the nurturing and the right type of guidance there. And lastly, as we close out today's conversation, please share a few words of inspiration that you'd like to pass on to girls and women in the continent who are listening to us.
So as I previously said, that women must understand they belong in science, they belong in medicine, and any specialized field that they dream of. And women mustn't be scared to not fit in. It's important for you to put your mindset to something and make it happen. Nobody's going to make it for you. If you've got a mindset of, I want to achieve X, Y, and Z, you need to push yourself. Get your friends to encourage you, or get your tribe, as you mentioned, to encourage you and to achieve that. But nothing is impossible. Nothing, nothing. The odds were completely against me, and I've made it. And I think it's so important that you have a perfect mindset. And I'm going to throw a biblical version in here as well, because Job 22 verse 28 said, "You will succeed in whatever you choose to do, and light will shine on the road ahead of you." It's all about making the correct decisions and going through with it. Even if you feel that life is too tough, I don't have electricity, I don't have XYZ, you can still make it. Just have a good mindset.
And in that mindset, it sounds like if you've got the conviction, if you've got your dream, it is doable. It might not happen in a straight line, or it might not happen on time, but it is doable.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for joining us today and being part of our series on women in veterinary science. It's been a real eye-opener.
Only a pleasure, and thanks for having me.
You're listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity, and today we've been talking to Dr. Kaylin du Plessis, who is a veterinarian in Pretoria Zoo with a special interest in exotic animals and surgery.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.